This is Radio Woking. Available online at radiowoking.co.uk.
We're joined in the studio this morning by Helen Bullen, who is going to tell us about a very, very interesting and very, very personal roller coaster of your sort of life story through cancer. The book is called Agnes B, Cancer and Me. Good morning, Helen.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us at Radio Woking. Really, really lovely to have you here. And we're going to talk about your book and a serious subject, but what I love about sort of about you is you're approaching it with a sense of humour along the way.
Yeah, there was definitely humour throughout, but as you'll see in the book, there is some snot and slobber, as I call it, where I burst into tears, cry on the floor. But I'm pretty good at doing that for a few minutes, a few hours, and then picking myself up. And I've always been a little bit weird, really. You can call it funny, but really I've been a bit weird. So I made it. I mean, the title of the book, per se, is Agnes and B. I couldn't think, I was writing a book, what do I call my boobs? I can't keep calling them boobs, breasts, whatever it was. So I named them A and B, Agnes and B.
Okay.
And Agnes came across as being a little bit in agony because she was the one in trouble. And I'm a retired osteopath, so I knew the pathology of cancer. So I was really cross with her for doing her cell division wrong. Her mathematical abilities were poor. So throughout the whole book, I talk about how I'm not speaking to her. She's not my favourite person. And then she passed on her mathematical skills to my lymph nodes as well, so I had to have those removed. Being diagnosed with stage 3 triple negative breast cancer. So yeah, I tried to keep the humour in it as much as I could, but people tell me they cry 1 minute and laugh the next.
So, I have to say, that is an amazing way to think about it and talk about it, and just have it in your own head that, you know, your boob's not being your friend, your boob's not doing the right thing.
I was angry.
She's playing up, so you're just not going to talk to her.
Like, I was irritated and angry, and it was all her fault throughout the whole thing. It's all her fault that I'm having to have chemo and all the tests that I'm having.
As we mentioned, Helen, you know, your life pre-cancer, 2003, you graduated as an osteopath, you've been teaching around the world, multi-health clinic, so, you know, the diagnosis in 2021, I mean, what, bolt out the blue, is that how you're...
Yeah, well, we had lockdown, and I decided to retire as being an osteopath in lockdown. My husband had got early retirement, and great, I thought I'm going to be travelling. In a way, it was a good thing, but little did I know that the year after that, I was going to get a cancer diagnosis. And actually, I was running a big clinic, running, 26 people working with me. It actually, if I had a time that I had to have it, that was the time. My husband had just retired. So again, I try and look at it positively. But we were one of those people that tried to get married in 2020. We've been together 15 years. And we chose 2020 of all the years to get married.
That's not the year to choose to get married.
So May was shut off, and we managed to sneak in a little date in July. When they kept opening it and shutting it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we managed to sneak in a date with 5 other people, and my friend is a registrar, so I got a friend there too, and we actually got married. But we went in our jeans and it was great. It was cool. We went in our jeans, and we said, well, we'll celebrate next year in May. Well, of course, then I got the cancer diagnosis, so our celebrations went to May 2022. And I got diagnosed in, I have to think of my dates now, in June 2021. I had treatment right up to my last chemo was on Christmas Eve. So I am the person that arrives in the Christmas Santa hat to, I'm bald at that point.
Of course you are.
I'm bald at that point, and I'm like, well, what other hat would you wear today? Everybody on the ward, though, nobody else had a luck, except for the nurses, nobody else had thought the same idea. So I tell them to do that. I have my chemo, and then I have a mastectomy in the 2022, and then we have our wedding celebration in May 2022, and I am cancer clear by the time I get there. So it was a
well done, amazing.
Yes.
What a wedding present that is.
I know. I'm fortunately and unfortunately, I bought my dress in 2019, cancer free, long hair, slimmer. You know, chemo doesn't always make you lose weight. The steroids and stuff can make you put on weight. I put on 2 stone. I'm trying to get in a dress with only 1 boob. You know, it's comical. No hair. And then I just bleached it blonde the night before because I thought, I'm fed up with this. I'm just going to go white. So I bleach it blonde. And actually, it was a great day. I did manage to get in the dress. They managed to let it out a little bit for me.
Oh, there you go.
But it was a great way to celebrate with friends. And you always get to see all the people you haven't seen for years, don't you, at a wedding. It was great.
I guess in a strange way, that's going to be as memorable memorable, if not more memorable, than it might have been in 2019.
I think so, yeah. I think so. You wouldn't wish it, but actually it was a really... It was a nice way to end the book. It was like, oh, I've got a happy ending. Great.
Yeah.
And not everybody... And seriously, not everybody has as fortunate
No,
happy
they
ending.
Don't.
I'm very lucky.
So you take you back to 2021. Yeah. You got that diagnosis. I mean, what was the sort of... What led up to that diagnosis? Was it just like a routine checkup, or was there something that you thought, when you get this checked out, or...?
Yeah, it was a routine mammogram, and I was 53 when I was diagnosed, and it was only my second routine mammogram. You have them from 50. And to be honest, I obviously get irritated with lots of things. I was like, I haven't got time. My daughter was moving that day, but I still went. I managed to book it in another place that was closer to my daughter's, had it done, but it's COVID. I'm in the rain outside, being really grumpy. But I would say to anybody, just go and get your checks done, because I had no idea I had stage 3 cancer. I couldn't feel anything. I had 3 parts in the breast. I had my lymph nodes as well. Without that checkup, I possibly wouldn't be sitting here now. So I would say to anything, if you've got any symptoms, and I talk about that in my book, anything you think isn't right, go and get it checked. Don't wait and think you haven't got time, you know. Get it done.
You know that there's sort of doctors, and there's this sort of message, you know, they'd rather, you know, people contacted them, got checked out, and be told it's nothing than for, you know, because if you get these things earlier, I suppose there's more, you know, there's more chance of a sort of a positive outcome.
Yeah, and then the worst that can happen, I suppose, is the doctor says there's nothing wrong. Great, you know, if there's something wrong, early treatment is the key. Getting in early, and you know, there's lots of talk. I think it's bowel cancer awareness at the moment.
Mm-hmm, with Deborah James.
Yeah, with Deborah James. Yeah. If you've got any symptoms that aren't your usual symptoms, you don't really have to know what they are. If it's not your normal, go and ask a GP about it. Get seen.
So you went for the routine checkup, and then they tell you those words, you know, you have stage 3 breast cancer. I mean, what goes through your mind when you hear those words?
Well, when I first got told, they take a while to find out what type of breast cancer you have. My cancer is quite a rare one. There's only 20% of the breast cancers is triple negative, and it basically means it's not hormonal. So when I first found out, they tell you you've got cancer, but they have to do far more tests. So I had to go and ring my husband. He wasn't with me because I didn't think anything was wrong. I got called back for a recall. And I just said to him, hi, Eddie, I've got cancer. I'll be home soon. And I put the phone down.
Well, very matter of fact.
Yeah. I know.
Imagine that phone call.
Yeah, well, I'm called kindly. But to be honest, how else do you do it? And I had a nurse who was lovely, but obviously felt she couldn't let me go unless she felt I was all right.
Yeah.
So I had to portray that I was all right. I remember having biopsies taken and saying to them, oh, I know, I feel fine, this is cool. My body was actually physically shaking, so my physiology was in shock, but I was like a swan, I suppose, you know, graceful on the top, paddling like mad underneath. But yeah, my poor husband.
Imagine, I mean, you mentioned in the book as well, you know, sort of thinking about family, thinking about friends that are going on that journey with you, and often maybe sort of their sort of how they're feeling, or maybe potentially could get forgotten, because it's all about sort of like, you know, your story, what you're going through, but there's people behind you, your support network, and for your husband to receive that message, you know, it's like, oh.
I was just thinking, actually, because obviously having a disability myself, I'm very much like you. I'm very much like, let's make a joke of this, let's say it's the body's fault, so-and-so's letting me down, or I'm just being matter-of-fact, but then I remember those around me, family and friends, and go, actually, just that joke is going to be seismic to them, so...
Yeah. I mean, I am fortunate, and maybe fortunate, not fortunate. My husband has had cancer, so he had testicular cancer back in 89, so he does understand it, but I didn't even get to give him a chance to talk, I have to say. But he was so supportive, but what I worried about was that we've got a good friendship support. I really loved it that people reached out to him, because it can be really easy. It's not easier having the cancer, I don't think, but you're sort of on this conveyor belt. Everybody expects you to be a little bit sad. You're being treated. The people looking after you are supposed to be really strong, whatever.
They
really
need support
strong.
As well, don't they?
Yeah, they need
absolutely.
Support.
Of course
and
they do,
need to, you know, and because it was COVID, it wasn't so easy just these mates to grab him, take him to the pub. But people would turn up in our garden with pints, you know, and say to him, right, you sit over there, I'm sitting over here, we're having a drink type thing. So it was lovely, you know, and I had a really close friend, Jackie, who supported me. And every day, even if I could only walk to the end of the road, we would go for a walk, and she would just listen. She would just listen to what I was saying, and so I'm really appreciative of everybody that supported me, all the medical staff, everybody, and I think it's important to think about that.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to talk
some
more.
We've got some things to do. We've got some ads and some things to do. We've also got a first of, hopefully, and another classic track, but it was chosen by Helen for a very special reason.
Well, Well, yeah, it sounds a bit odd now. I've written a bit on Agnes B. Cancer Me, but it's always been my funeral song. I want to be dancing as I go, and you know, I'll be in my box dancing.
This is before the diagnosis.
This is before the diagnosis.
Okay,
I call that very well planned.
Yeah,
and I love the fact you were telling us whilst I was playing about your husband's tour as a funeral song.
Yeah, Going Underground by the Clash.
That is very appropriate. Yeah. There you go. I think that's quite fascinating, isn't it? What people choose as their song.
Yeah, I want people to smile, you know, in a nice way, not smile that I've gone and they're happy.
No,
just smile in a nice way. Yeah,
absolutely. Yes, make it a celebration of your life. And
yeah,
things like that.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not going yet though.
No,
I just want to put it out.
Exactly.
No, you're going nowhere. She's got a book to promote and sell.
Yeah, you got your book to promote first. And we mentioned, you know, the cancer diagnosis in 2021. Just thinking about getting that diagnosis, and at that point, I would imagine there'd still be sort of COVID restrictions in place, so you still have that kind of that going on in the background. I mean, how did that sort of impact things for you?
Yeah, it was really hard because before I had my chemotherapy, there was a bit of a break with some heart tests and some brain scans and stuff like that, and I couldn't really see anybody because I couldn't take the chance of getting COVID. And it was really before, I'm not even sure if we'd started to have vaccinations, we hadn't. Mm. So I could see people in the garden, and lots of people want to see you when you've got a diagnosis like that. And for part of me, I'm a bit of a people pleaser. I didn't want to upset anybody, but I couldn't see people. So I had friends that would come in all weathers. So this was probably, it was August, but I remember there being one rainy day, them coming round. They're in umbrellas, waterproof coats, sitting outside while I sit with the bifold doors open thinking, this is freezing, this is the good idea. But they all came round to see me. So, yeah, it was hard. Mm. And when I was in the hospital wards, they actually did let Eddie come in and he could sit in the waiting room, but you weren't allowed anybody in the chemo ward with you.
Okay.
And just generally, it adds to, I don't know whether it added to the scariness because I've never done it without, but for me, it felt a little bit like...
It's an added sort of like a complication, I suppose.
It was an added thing.
Yes,
I couldn't just go out and try and be normal or go to any parties or anything. Not that there was parties going on, but people were having gatherings of six, whatever. I couldn't even do that. Or having my family around, I had to be really careful.
So that must have been very isolating for you.
It was, but Zoom was a great thing.
Yep.
You know, we were all into Zoom.
Yep.
And I had, as I said, one friend, Jackie, we would walk every day. So we would keep apart, but we could walk and talk. And I think it went up that you could walk with more than two people while I was going. I forget now, don't you? Forget
it seems like such a long time ago. It's a few years ago.
Forget
well,
the restrictions.
It?
But as the restrictions lifted, things got easier for me. And there were occasions where that lockdown would come and they'd say, actually, Eddie can't come in the hospital today. But I was fortunate that for all the big things where I was told about my diagnosis, etc., he was actually there, the official stuff, he was allowed in, so that was good.
Okay.
And I've had many COVID tests where you drive up to the COVID thing.
Oh, yes.
The man shoved the things down your
throat. Yeah, oh, yes.
Yeah,
remember them well. Again, it just seems like another world, doesn't it?
It does,
really?
Yeah. It seems like another life.
Was it okay talking to professionals and accessing services, though? Because I guess that would have been a challenge as well.
Do you know what? I was at St Luke's in Guildford, and it was, I cannot fault it, 100%, it was excellent. I wouldn't really have known that COVID was going on, except that we had to wear masks and be a bit careful. The service I had was just incredible. And I was having weekly chemo for most of it. It was absolutely incredible.
Okay. We mentioned as well, Helen, about, you know, remembering friends going on a journey with you and sort of family and your support and that. But just thinking, I mean, you know, I went through a bereavement during 2020, you know, obviously very different, but sort of a big event in life when you experience a diagnosis or trauma in your life. People often, I don't know if you'll sort of find this as well, just don't really know what to say to you. They kind of they don't want to say the wrong thing, so maybe they'll sort of not say anything, and they won't be around, and then a few months later they'll be like, I don't know what to say, so I said nothing.
Yeah, I had a lot of people, not people necessarily said it out loud, but you knew that people, I used to laugh and say, Teddy, somebody else has dropped another candle at the door and they've run. but to be honest, most people tried. The people that really linked with me were the people that didn't go away over the 6 months of my chemo. So a lot of people were there in the beginning because it was a big shock and nobody expected me to get cancer. And then it sort of fizzled out. And when you get chemotherapy, you get it on day one, but day three to day four is probably the worst because then it's starting to destroy all those cells and it destroys all the fast. And I have people on day one go, yeah, another one done. And I think, that's not the right thing to say to me. I've got another week of really trying to get through this. And people that were uncomfortable around me, whereas I just wanted them to treat me like normal.
Yeah.
And my friend Jackie was brilliant and she just said to me, just tell me what's going on. What's going on in your world? And she listened. Occasionally she'd say to me, right, enough crying. Let's have a bit of smiling. Let's talk about something else. But she was matter of fact, how she would be with normally. But I don't think you can blame people for not knowing what to say.
Well, you
but
can't.
I think say something, and you don't have to be just normal stuff, you know, or take a meal round, or drop something off that's useful, or offer to pick the children up. You know, I didn't have young children, my kids grown up, but I always think if I had little kids, would have been good to say, well, I'm going to collect the kids every Wednesday and Thursday, and just... Yeah. You know,
kind of normal everyday to day stuff, and
but just be a friend, basically.
But like you say, you can't blame people because if, I mean, I know that if someone was going through something like that, and I'd be like, you know, what do you say? You don't want to say the wrong thing, you don't want to upset them. There's all this kind of stuff going through your head. So I know you cover that a lot in your book, don't you?
I do, and I think sometimes saying that out loud, I'm coming to speak to you, and I feel a bit. Sometimes you can say it, you know. Mention the elephant in the room, you're not quite sure what to say. What would you like me to say? What do you want me to do? Can I do anything? Can I listen? Can I... a few of my friends, we used to go for an outside coffee, so we'd and they'd meet up once a week. And
I remember those.
Yeah, what, the outside coffees where you're freezing. Luckily, I was wearing a lot of hats because I hadn't got any hair, so I was always wrapped up with a
outside
with a
dining
hat
as well. I think sitting in the garden.
Yeah. I had a group of friends, and they said to me, "Right, well, four of us will meet up at the coffee shop," and then they would chatter about their life, and I could just listen to normality.
Yeah,
and I really like that. But I think it is subjective. I think what you have to understand is everybody's different.
Yeah.
I told everybody, I wrote a flipping book about it. I started a diary on day one as I went through. Some people don't want to say anything. For me, I've always been quite open, maybe to my detriment sometimes. But I think you just have to be aware of what does that person want, try and read into that.
Yeah.
And then don't be there on the first few days and then not 6 weeks, 3 months down the line, 4 months. You know, even now, I don't have cancer right now, but I have a 60% chance it won't come back, but my cancer's quite an aggressive one, so there's a 40% chance it will. So I feel like I walk around with a shadow, but I'm keeping it behind me. The sun's in front of me, the shadow's behind me, but it's there.
You're focused on a 60% rather than 40% then,
Which is a good way to do it, and the odds to do.
The odds, and I normally beat the odds, so I'm okay with that, but... But I don't think sometimes some friends think it's done and dusted and they're happy because they don't, you know, never have to mention the cancer word again. But actually it's still going on in my world and it will be in other people's world. And if you've yourself, if you've been bereaved, it doesn't just stop two years afterwards.
No, exactly. And people I found were phoning me up, you know, in some cases for the first few days, and then they kind of got back to their lives. And interestingly, there were people that I hadn't spoken to in ages, so I wouldn't have expected to reach out, that got in touch as well. It was just really, it was quite random in some ways.
Yeah, no, I found that. When you sort of work out who's... I think it's a learning thing. I think, I was going to say, you work out who is your real friend, but I think it's also, as somebody on the other side, is being accepting that people don't know what to say.
So... And, I guess one thing that intrigues me, that I understand you writing a diary and having your own log of what went on, but when did you make the decision, right, I'm going to take these diaries and my own thoughts, feelings and everything I've done and put it into a book to tell my story, to help other people and inspire other people?
It was pretty early on. I'm actually an author already, so I have a business book called I've Got Your Back, Retired Osteopath. I think it's a very clever title.
I like it.
It's called The Essential Guide to Marketing Your Therapy Business. So I've already written a book. So I like writing. Obviously, I write content. I'm a business mentor. I write content all the time. And it was the natural thing to do. And then I thought, oh, how can I make this that I help other people? So when people don't know what to say... Can I help them? Don't say this, but try saying this, or do this instead. So it became a book of my story, but for people going through it, people looking after going through it, and also for anybody that didn't know what to say, you know, that just was a bit bemused by it all, or wanted to know actually what it's like going through chemotherapy. Because
we will talk more about the book and more about the amazing quotes that are in the book from your podcast, which we'll also talk about in a little bit here on Radio Woking. But I found out what I hope you will think is a very clever song for next, because Natasha Bedingfield, none written on Radio Woking.
I like that. Good.
This is Radio Woking.
And we're joined in the studio by our guest, Helen Bunyan. We're talking about the brilliant book. I've got a copy in front of me here.
We both got a copy. Thank you very much.
Love it. Thank you for that.
My pleasure.
Agnes B, Cancer, and me. And we've already discovered the idea behind Agnes and B being your breasts.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which
is
A and B.
Yeah.
Agnes and B.
Genius. I just love your sort of approach to this. I mean, I suppose when faced with this, you can go sort of one of two ways. It's either going to be, you know, look at it and try and make light and bring in some humour into the darkness where you can, or you can kind of shut yourself away and go all depressed, and you've kind of gone the first way.
I think it's a bit of both. The book, in truth, people have said to me they're crying one minute and laughing the next, and that's probably how I was. So there were
many rollercoaster.
A rollercoaster. Yes. Chemotherapy is tough. Mm. You know, telling your children you've got cancer is tough. So all those moments were there. But I also then had times where I could reflect and try and make light of it. But I was no, you know, Pollyanna through it. I mean, I was snot slobber. Some days I was grumpy, irritable, downright rude. I used any excuse I could be. But throughout it, if I could, and for me, it was getting out every day, going for a walk, seeing a sunrise, just trying to listen to good music. And I think we've just got a song that maybe played later that I really like and cheered me up. You know, it's that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit of both, the book.
Okay, so a roller coaster of emotions, telling your story in a very honest, very sort of down to earth way. And we mentioned that you were, you know, writing a journal of your thoughts and what you were going through as it was sort of happening. But I mean, writing it as a book and having it out there, and some amazing reviews on Amazon. Everyone's kind of, you know, loving the book. And
5 stars, I think you want to say.
Five stars. Absolutely.
I had a quick look online this morning, actually. I started the show when John gave me your full details, and there's some amazing reviews generally online. I think people are loving the book because it's so open, it's so honest, and it feels real to people when they read it.
Yeah, it's real life, isn't it? I suppose. I
have one complaint, or I had quite a few complaints, that people couldn't put it down. That is the complaint. Because I'm quite a simple person. I don't write in complicated language, and it's done in sort of, it's not every day of the journey, but it's done in a diary form, and it's quite an easy way to read it.
Okay.
And I am kindly blunt throughout, as I was telling you.
What I was going to say, though, is did you have to check with friends and family that are mentioned in the book that they're all right with that?
Did they
have any input, or was it just all you?
I mentioned my children. I met my husband's name and my best friend Jackie, because it was all positive stuff. In fact, everything was positive throughout it. But I actually didn't name the medical staff, because you do have to get permission, and I didn't want that to be part of it.
No.
You know, I call my surgeon. I say she's like a headmistress. She is lovely and very intelligent, but she has information she needs to tell me, like a headmistress. But, you know, typical me, I'm going, oh, you know, blah, 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 blah. I'm thinking, oh, no, I've got to listen, because it's serious.
Sit down, pay attention.
Yeah, so I didn't name her. But she was lovely and brilliant. And I say that in the book, she was brilliant. Mm. So I actually avoided doing a lot of the naming, because I didn't think it was my story.
Yeah, your story, it's not.
I didn't want anybody else to feel that they were in any way named in there.
And how do you feel, I mean, the idea of having the book, your personal story, and the fact that people are, you know, picking up the book and reading that personal story and going through that journey with you, and people that you may not know reading the story? I mean, what's that sort of?
Yeah, well, I suppose for some of my close friends, I really wanted to know what I was going through, because I really put on a front throughout it, and I worried what other people were thinking, as in I didn't want them to be upset. So there's that side of it. But I also wanted it to be a help book for people either going through it or watching somebody going through it, or as we spoke about, the people that don't know what to say or what to do or feel uncomfortable. I wanted to break some of the taboos. So throughout the book, there's little chunks, and my podcast is called Kindly Blunt. It has been for years, because I was saying it gives me excuse to say what I like in a kind way. I'm a business mentor by trade, so it tends to be that. But I wrote those sections really to try and help people pray see the thing and say, right, if you don't know what to say, try listening instead, or try taking around a meal, or, you know, don't leave them on the first day. All those things
if you're
going
to look awkward, this is what to do.
This is how to look awkward. In fact, I wish I'd thought of that, because I would have put it in the book. Write another one.
This is going to be so useful for people, because, you know, here you are, someone who's been through the cancer diagnosis, so you're kind of, in a way, I suppose, qualified to, like, tell people what worked for you. I mean, everyone's different, but hopefully that's going to go a long way. People reading your story that may be going through similar or know somebody who is, that's going to help them as well.
Yeah, and I do say it's subjective. It is, you know, each person is different, and I think that's what I tried to say, was ask the person, what do they want from you? How can you help them? Be specific. You know, I had friends that you would come round and they bring their cup of coffee with them, because they understood that I say to them, oh, poor Eddie's had to make 8 cups of coffee, you know, for outside in the garden type thing. So they'd bring their coffee, their hats, their umbrellas, their coats, because they were sitting in the garden. But they would do that, and that helped, and that was a thing that I put in there, you know, try and do that, or what you can create. So hopefully
you don't
want
to go around and give the person or the people supporting them more work to do because you're there.
No, but you also don't want to not go around because you think you're going to give them more work. So it's like that happy medium, isn't it? Yeah. I'm coming round, but I've brought a coffee and I've brought something for you, you know, even
yes,
better.
Take some of the
I brought
load
you flapjacks.
Yeah.
That was always good when somebody said
exactly,
that. Yeah.
Were they homemade though?
Yeah, somebody one of them, in fact she's named in the back of the book as one of my real friends that came and showed up. She used to rock up with flapjacks every now and again at the front door and she'd ring the bell and wave through the window and go, "Flapjacks."
We all need a good keen baker in our lives to drop cakes off.
Although she did used to say, "Tell me if Eddie likes them," and I don't know if I actually shared any of them with Eddie.
I'm getting all coming out now, isn't it?
Your partner Eddie will be listening now, going, "She didn't."
Going off, nothing about flapjacks.
He'll just say, "I'm not surprised."
They were obviously flapjacks, so delicious that you just wanted to eat them
yourself.
They were
lovely. I didn't want to eat anything else. Yeah.
And I guess going forward now, the book is out there, so you're probably in a position to mentor, support and inspire other people, paying it all forward and going forward.
Yeah, I'd like to think the book will help people and I'd like to think it will, maybe not, I mean, yes, of course I would support people and I've had somebody already that's been and had an earlier diagnosis because I talked about it and I was on my social media doing it. But I just hope it's a book that means they can support other people, helps other people support other people, if you know what I mean. Did that make sense?
Yes, it did. I think it did.
Yeah. Matt looked really confused as I said that.
No, I was looking at something else. I was doing maths in my head.
Okay.
So you got the all clear in 2022 last year.
Yeah,
I mean,
March.
We talked a bit about when you got that diagnosis, how you're feeling, but when
did you have a party?
I had a glass of champagne.
Oh, there you go.
I had
celebrating
a glass of
style.
Champagne, and I did this year because I was a year cancer-free in March, and I had another glass of champagne. So yeah, it's hard, isn't it, to really celebrate because they don't really say you're cancer-free; they say it's all clear at the moment type thing. And for the first 3 to 5 years, you know, you're regularly checked, which is nice. You know, people check in on you, and you know. Some people aren't as fortunate that they're one bout of cancer and they don't get another. So I'm very aware and I do all my self-checking and that sort of stuff, and as everybody should.
Is that a concern that it will come back, though? Is this something that's on your mind? And
well, with the type of cancer I had, they say there's a 60% chance it won't.
Yes.
So I'm focusing on that.
Yes, no, that's
good. We all know the maths, 40% chance. Mm. 40 is quite high, but I like to think I'm always a bit above average, so I'm going to be the 60.
Exactly,
but
you've got the majority.
Having met you this morning, I fully agree. You are a bit above average.
but I feel like it's a bit of a shadow behind me, and I try and keep the sun. So every day, I try and either see a sunrise, or I'll do something like have coffee with friends, or I'm booking another holiday. I am doing work I love. I run a business that I love. I business mentor people. I only work with people I want to work with when I want to work.
Yeah.
Trying to create that life, which we should be doing.
Yes.
But sometimes you need something that rocks your boat before you decide that's what you're going to do.
So
but that's what I'm doing.
Having a diagnosis of cancer, I mean, how would you say that has kind of impacted or changed your outlook on life? I mean
it's definitely live for the day, you know. Live in the now, because if you start thinking, well, what's going to happen in 5 months, 6 months, it's no good for anybody, and you don't know, do you? You just don't. None of us know what's going to happen.
Enjoy every moment.
So it is, and it sounds cliche, doesn't it? But actually find something in every day, and I like doing things like, I like journaling, I like doing gratitude, you know, even for the simple things, like I have a roof over my head and I have food on the table. Sometimes you've got to take yourself back to reality, the basics, and appreciate friends. I probably see more friends than I used to see more regularly, and my parents, etc. Not that I didn't see people, but I make sure that I really go out of my way to see people just in case, because I don't know what's going to happen to me, I don't know what's going to happen to them, you know. And sometimes we leave it, don't know, I'll do it in a few weeks or next year or whatever.
I know there'll be people screaming at the radio now going, "Helen's been great. How do I get the book? Where do I find it? What do I do?"
Well, all you have to do is put my name, Helen Bullen, or Agnes B. Cancer and Me, into Amazon, and it will shine at you. It'll come up like, da-da!
Brilliant.
Like that. No. If you go onto Amazon, it's there. Helen Bullen. There's one L in Helen, and there's two in Bullen. And if you Google that, or not Google it, but search it in the Amazon search bar, you'll find it. But if not, if you put helenbullen.com into your Google search, you'll find my website, and the books are all on there too.
And you now, you mentioned your working with businesses, and you do business retreats. So I wanted you to tell me a bit about that.
I do, yes.
They sound amazing. Can we come over?
Yeah. Well, I'm off tomorrow. I do. I used to, before lockdown, I used to do a couple of UK ones, and I actually used to do one in Thailand as well. So I used to enjoy that. But I haven't done that since lockdown, because obviously everything got a little bit screwed around, isn't it? So, yeah, I'm off tomorrow down to Ferring near Worthing with 12 business owners. One other mentor comes with me who does a bit of work with me in the mornings. And we just have fun, but we also run businesses. And I work with small business owners, solo people that work on their own. So it's things about tech that we're doing, creating content. We're going to be talking about ChatGPT this time.
Oh, okay.
Not done that one yet.
On ChatGPT. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. Podcasting, they wanted to know about. And basically, I try and fit in, you know, people, new income streams, that sort of stuff. But I love it. I would, if I could, I would start a new business every day. I love the excitement of new ideas and setting it up. So I get to do that through other people's businesses, which is fantastic.
Amazing. And yeah, I imagine at the moment there's a lot of challenges out there, the cost of living, and particularly smaller businesses, you know, facing those sort of challenges.
Yeah, huge challenges. And I think a lot of them have diversified in some way. So I do tend to work, because I'm a retired osteopath, I have a lot of people that own clinics and things like that. Well, they've got heating costs skyrocketing. Yeah. But a lot of them are now starting some online courses. I've got somebody wanting to write a book, which is I now can help people with a little
bit. With your five-star reviews on Amazon.
Don't anybody go and put not a five-star review just to bring it down. Thanks, I only want five-star ones. But yeah, no, so I love it. And I work with people I like to work with. I have a membership as well, and I have a mastermind group that I work with. So yeah, and I also have a stationery box. I haven't told you that. I have the HB box. It's just stationery box, go out twice a year. So I have the HB Club, HB Inspired, HB Box, and HB Retreats.
You have a lot going on in your life.
You're a busy woman.
You're one of those people, I think, that just likes to stay busy.
Yeah, and I kept it all going during that. And amazing. With some help from some coaches.
So during your own cancer diagnosis and the lockdown, you kept all that going?
I did, and I ran one retreat. After lockdown, I had to run one in October because we got so many people that couldn't go in the lockdown year. And I ran that while I was having chemo. I literally had the chemo on the Friday, ran it through, had to go back on the Wednesday for bloods and back in on the Friday when I'd finished for more chemo.
Wow.
I have no idea actually how I did it. But
I suppose it's just the adrenaline.
I took an extra coach with me, and my husband came as well. But we did it, and yeah, it was amazing.
Brilliant, Helen. Thank you so much for coming to see us here at Radio Awakening.
It's been an amazing,
really amazing,
inspiring morning
to hear your story.
I've loved coming. Thank you.
Yeah, we've loved having you. And the book Agnes B, Cancer and Me, by Helen Bullen, is available now on Amazon. Go and buy it, and leave a five star review. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Helen.
Can we ask you to do one more thing, Helen? Do you want to tell us what song we're basically going to almost be ending the show on, because it's your final request in the morning?
Well, it's one that I like dancing. It's Lizzo, Am I Ready? And I may be singing in the background, sorry.
Okay, no, don't worry, we can never
on a Sunday morning. This is Radio Woking.